Yesterday, Crimeans voted to join Russia. Today, Crimea's parliament approved a resolution declaring the region independent and then filed an appeal to join the Russian Federation. Also today, the U.S. and European Union slapped travel bans and asset freezes on a number of Russian and former Ukrainian officials. President Obama announced the sanctions in a televised speech from the White House.
We are imposing sanctions on specific individuals responsible for undermining the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and government of Ukraine. We're making it clear that there are consequences for their actions.
Well, those individuals targeted include members of Russia's parliament and advisors to President Vladimir Putin. But how is the move to secede reverberating in pro-Russia eastern Ukraine? The Boston Globe's David Filipov joins us by Skype from an internet cafe in Donetsk in eastern Ukraine. And David, Ukrainians in the West, in Kiev, fear a domino effect. You write that you're seeing a secessionist fever spreading across the East. Tell us more.
Well, every day people gather outside government buildings with the intent of storming them, going inside, taking down the Ukrainian flags, putting up Russian flags, and demanding that they too get to hold a referendum on either seceding from Ukraine, joining Russia, or at the very least gaining more autonomy within Ukraine.
Well, and you hear a slogan being said. Explain this to us. Fascism will not pass. Again, this is a pro-Russian crowd talking about the new government in Kiev in Ukraine. They say, Putin, come here and chase away Bandera. What are they saying there?
Well, the line, the way that Russians feel is that you go back to World War II, the Soviet army fought and defeated Hitler. This is the basic narrative. There were Ukrainian collaborators with the Nazis. And so the feeling is we in eastern Ukraine are like the Soviet Union, the victors in World War II, defenders of the world against fascism. And those guys there are the fascists. Now, that's a really simple way of putting it, because they were Ukrainians who fought and were killed in the Red Army. You know, there were Russian collaborators. But that's the narrative that's working now. And that's why you see Russian demonstrators with these orange and black flags, which is the flag that was flown on Victory Day in the Soviet Union after the end of World War II. Bandera is Stepan Bandera. He's a Ukrainian nationalist hero who, during World War II, fought for Ukraine's independence, which sometimes meant fighting on the same side as Nazi Germany. Ukrainians say it's more complex than that, that he was a Ukrainian patriot, not a Nazi. But over here in the eastern side, and of course in Russia and Moscow, his name is synonymous with fascism, you know, that whole thing.
Well, David, you say there in the east they see Bandera and the party that reveres him, Svoboda, as fascists and Nazi collaborators in Bandera's time. But aren't there people outside of the east of Ukraine who also see this one strain of the opposition in the new government in Ukraine as anti-Semitic and fascist?
Right. Well, there are famous speeches. You can go on YouTube and find them of, Ukrainian nationalist party leaders who are saying things like that. Now, right now, when you interview them, and I haven't, I've just read interviews, I've been out here in the East, so I can't say this on firsthand, they're saying, you know, that was way back then, we've changed our ways, we moderated our views. And tellingly, when I was in Dniepropetrovsk, an eastern Ukraine city, which has a very large Jewish population, people there were saying, yes, we know these Svoboda Party members, they aren't fascists, they aren't ultra-nationalists, and ultra-nationalists, they get along with us, we get along with them, we can deal with them. So that's the feeling, is that they moderated their scene. Yeah. Whether or not you, me, or anyone here accepts that is a different matter.
That's David Filipov. He's a reporter for the Boston Globe who's found an internet cafe in Donetsk in the eastern part of Ukraine where there have been protests by pro-Russian supporters. You're listening to Here and Now. Well, tell us about your trip to Dniepropetrovsk. Have I said that even close?
Dniepropetrovsk. That name was not made for English speakers. It's the Dnieper River. This is an industrial city, 1 million people, where they used to make SS-20 intercontinental missiles that were aimed at us to blow us to smithereens in case we ever tried anything on the Soviet Union. It's also a city that historically had a large Jewish population. For World War II, the Jewish population was nearly half the size of the city. And during the Soviet era, of course, Jewish culture and life, like all religions, was basically assimilated into the official Soviet doctrine. There wasn't a Holocaust. There were Soviet citizens who were killed in the war. There were no religions. There was no Jewish life and culture. There was one synagogue. And since 1992, the community there has made a remarkable comeback. It's very vibrant. It's a very big part of the larger Dniepropetrovsk society. There, I said it. And so, you know, the governor now is Jewish. He's the person who built this amazing Jewish community center. And so there's this sense of quite a bit of revival and quite a bit of we can't believe how far we've come given where we started.
And a lot of concern about what happens next. And as you said, these were Jews who were horribly persecuted by the Holocaust and then by the Soviet Union, which pretty much tried to wipe out their existence and their beliefs. They feel they've had this comeback. And now, as you said earlier, they're not as much concerned about the opposition party in the West in Kiev that some people consider fascist. They're more concerned about a Soviet-style Russian takeover because of what happened to them during the Soviet Union.
Well, yeah, if you go back to the history, yes, the devastation of the Holocaust is something that Jews in Ukraine do not forget. However, what came after that for the people who survived was all the years of oppression and a forced assimilation. But more importantly, when they look at what's the best future for them in Ukraine, it's the West, it's Europe, not just Jews, but anybody in Ukraine who is not thinking, I want to be back in Russia. And Europe, money, the ability to travel, the ability to invest, the ability to have connections with other countries, that in Ukraine is the route that a lot of people want to take, other than members of this ethnic Russian minority that you see here in the East largely.
So, David Filipov, you've got two opinions here. You, in one city, you speak to Jews who are very concerned that what happened in Crimea will soon be happening to their area. But then in another city, you've got protesters pushing for a closer relationship and annexation by Russia. Overall, just what's the feeling in the East? I know you can't be everywhere, but what's the feeling?
The feeling is, who are these people from the West and what do they want with us? We want to be Russians. We want to be surrounded by Russian language. We want to be surrounded by Russian people. We don't want some other society to come in here. We don't want the Germans to come in here and tell us who's boss. And, you know, if we're in the European Union, what does that mean for us? Who are we now? That's the general feeling you get.
David Filipov, reporter for the Boston Globe. Again, he found an internet cafe where he could reach us by Skype in Donetsk in the eastern part of Ukraine, the very pro-Russian part of Ukraine. David, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.